Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off. Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast, another Tactical Tuesday episode. And today, we're going to outline 7 dropshipping niches to avoid in 2022. And I'm going to pass it off to you, John. We have some criteria here as far as like how are we actually determining that these are niches you should avoid, as well as we have some students who are in some of these niches. And so like, you know, let's get clarity on like why we tell you to avoid these and what we would recommend for people who are already there.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, you know, we obviously recommend people avoid these because, you know, they're not, you know, for any reason, they're not viable. And obviously we want people to get off to a good start. And, you know, one of the quickest ways to sort of create challenges for your high ticket dropshipping journey is to choose a niche or a market to be in that for any reason isn't viable. And that just makes your life difficult. So, you know, I mean, for people, there's people who are already in some of these. I mean, I can even, looking at the list, I've got some good friends who are in some of these, but they've been in them for a while. They're established. They've been making sales. And when they got into it, the conditions that, you know, we're about to talk through that make them not viable in 2022 and probably beyond didn't exist. So they kind of got in at a good time and, you know, they've made that, making their hay, as it were. But look, the main criteria that we look at when we're looking at niches and we're saying, is this viable or not? I mean, to say it's not viable, it's kind of like a mirror to some of the conditions that we say makes a niche viable, right? So listening to our back episodes where we talk about how do you pick a market to operate in? What are you looking for? What are your criteria? Well, it's kind of a flip side of some of that, right? So big ones that are a red flag for me certainly is the niche too competitive? Are the margins too low? And kind of with that one, you only really know that. So we know that because we've looked in a lot of niches. We've worked with our students, we've coached people or consulted people, and over the years, we just kind of know what the margins are like in some niches. Sometimes when you're starting out when you're first getting started, you don't know that. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking about products you might want to sell, then this is a bit of inside information on some of these niches. So that's pretty good. But I think there's those two: competitiveness, margins, and then also, I mean, I think about, you know, one of the big things that we say you need to think about when you're picking a niche is who are you going to serve? Like, can you identify your ideal customer there? And I think some of the ones that I would say you shouldn't do are ones where you can't sort of identify that. Or maybe you can identify 5 or 6 different ideal customers. And that's certainly something that I would avoid as well.
And I think there's a couple in here, like you said, where we have students winning already, where we might not recommend anybody starting fresh, hop in there, but those students are winning already. And the ones that are winning already have really focused on the who, right? So they're not trying to sell this, like some of these products are meant for a wide variety of people, and our successful students have really narrowed that down to one person, and they're only going to serve that one person and focus really hard on that. And I believe that's why they're successful. And I question whether anybody should start on some of these. But enough fanfare. Let's just jump right in, John. This list is fun. I'm going to guess it's no surprise to anyone that number one on our list is e-bikes. I think between Patreon and here, the word e-bike has probably been mentioned 50 times as a niche you should not go into. So e-bikes tops the list for me. We talked about it before. They were the number one item on every Lamborghini guru on the internet telling you how to high ticket dropship. It was number one on their list. You should do e-bikes. They're going to be hot this year. And because of that, everyone and their mother jumped in there to start up an e-bike store. In fact, I almost bought one a couple years ago. I was even falling into the FOMO at one point, and the margins looked decent, but it was a lot of junk products, a lot of sporadic sales. There wasn't really any who I could target. There wasn't even a lot of keywords to target back then. It was so new. And now it's completely oversaturated. There's just so many, a lot of fly-by-night dropshipping stores and a lot of people who might have not known better who popped up a store and they're trying to do this too. And so, John, you might have a little more data than me as far as like why you wouldn't recommend e-bikes, but I know for sure it's number one on both of our lists.
Yeah, look, for me, it's you hit on two of the things. The first one is the too saturated. So, tons of people trying to operate almost exactly the same business using the same website design. And a lot of these sites look identical. They're all selling the same brands, trying to do exactly the same thing. And there is a point where when there's too many people trying to do the same thing, it doesn't work for anybody. And this is certainly one of the markets where there are a few people that are actually, well, doing pretty decent or very well. And they actually took a different approach. And that's why they're doing well. But yeah, the other reason as well is there are a lot of crappy brands in this space. So there are some good ones, but there are a lot of there's a lot of brands in there, but there's a bunch that are really terrible to work with. And you can get into some trouble with that sort of stuff. And, you know, I've spoken to a number of people who have had quality issues, quality, you know, controls. They've made sales, they've had to refund a lot of money, chargebacks, you know, all that sort of stuff that we really like to avoid in high ticket drop shipping. This is one of those markets.
Hey, when products are hot like that, right? Not only do resellers hop on board and try to sell this stuff, manufacturers hop on board, people go out and they try to reproduce this stuff as fast as can. They want to ride this trend, right? And then typically there's this consolidation period where all of the junk gets kind of taken out of the market. They all lose, right? It takes a little while, but all the losers go out. Do you believe the consolidation has begun, is happening, is already over, or maybe hasn't even started yet?
I think it's happening. I mean, you know, but I think, you know, that line of between when a product, you know, first hits the market and then, you know, consolidates over time, that can be a long process. Like that can be a 10-year process, you know what I mean? Particularly if it's a product that has a really, can be used by really a large amount of people. And e-bikes, you know, I mean, it's a cool product, right? That could be used by a lot of people, particularly when we're, you know, heading into an environment where, you know, the price of oil's jacking up, you know, exponentially every day, at least here in Australia it is at the moment, because of things that are going on around the globe. And, you know, they offer a convenient form of transport. So they could be used by a lot of people. And that's probably one of the reasons people are attracted to the market. That's one of the reasons why a lot of suppliers are attracted to the market too and try to get in there with products that are not fully developed. So I think there are some brands that are well established now, though, that have gone through that sort of product development phase and they've got a solid product. And I'm sure there'll be a few more of those over time. But there's, you know, I've looked at it recently. There's still quite a bit of trash in there that you would get tripped up into trying to sell if you were going into that market. Because once again, it's really hard as somebody who's new to dropshipping for you to determine before you make sales whether a brand's going to be a good one to work with or not. Like you look at their website, you look at their product, you go, oh yeah, that looks nice. Those look like cool products. The margins are great. And you don't find out until you've sold four or five of them at 4,000 a pop that they're actually crap, right? And you're going to have a mountain of customer service issues to deal with, returns, all that sort of thing. So unfortunately, a lot of people have learned that the hard way with e-bikes. We're giving you the heads up that save yourself that pain for now. But I think down the track, would this story change about that product? Maybe. I don't know. But I think there's still a ways to go. Personally, though, like a trending or new product is an automatic red flag to me. For me, like if I'm thinking about where do I want to open a high ticket dropshipping site, I'm thinking about what are products that have gone through that process. Like they're just tried and tested. They're solid. They're stable. They've been on the market for a long time. You know what I mean? Because if you think about it, 3D printers, drones, e-bikes, you know, these are some of the high ticket trendy products that have been, that have popped up since I've been doing high ticket dropshipping. None of them work.
How dare you? That was my first ever business, John.
How did that go, Ben? Was that a winner?
I sold it for 1 year's pay and the people who bought it hired someone to run it and they ran it right into the ground.
Yeah. 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 Anyway.
Good day for me.
E-bikes, don't do it.
I just want to jump in here real quick and say, if you're loving this show, the number one thing you can do to help us right now is to smash that subscribe or follow button and leave us a review. It really does help us to grow this show and reach more people. And you can do it right now while you're listening. And also, if you've got a friend or two that you know should be listening to this show, make sure you share it with them or just send them to dropshippodcast.com. We'd love to have them join us as well. And real quick, I've got two additional dropshipping resources that we would love to share with you. The first is our free dropshipping Facebook group called The Dropship Tribe. It's all about high-ticket dropshipping, and you can learn a ton in there. All you need to do is jump onto Facebook and search The Dropship Tribe, or go to facebook.com/groups/dropshiptribe and hit the join button. Now, if you're loving the Dropship Podcast and you want more, we actually have a members-only version of this show where we go even deeper into high-ticket dropshipping. We do question and answers with our members, website reviews, teardowns, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. It's just $5 an episode, which is like a cup of coffee. And as a bonus, you get free access to our entire back catalogue of episodes when you join. So you can binge it without paying a cent. Just head over to patreon.com/dropshippodcast. And just as a note, you can find the links to both of those resources below in the show notes. Now let's dive back into the show.
All right, number one's out of the way, e-bikes. Number two, wine coolers. John, why do you hate wine coolers?
Oh, I don't hate wine coolers. I actually love wine. But wine coolers is a product, once again, this comes down to, for me, a combination of competition and margins. So once again, a product that was on everybody's top 10 niches to do for years now. And so while it's not quite as bad as e-bikes, there is always quite a few people trying to start a business selling these products. But for a lot of the brands that sell well in that market, the margins are very slim, particularly given the size and weight of the products and the associated shipping costs. So, I mean, you'd be talking about there's some popular brands that are doing like 10% margins or something like that, and that's just too low. And that actually wasn't the case going back about 4 years. It was a good niche to be in. But what happened was the price of constructing the products went up, and that was passed on to resellers, but the retail price, the MAP price of the products didn't go up at the same time. And so margins have just gradually kind of got squeezed in there at the same time that competition's been going up. So, you know, for that reason, it's a bit of a struggle at the moment.
Well, I have a little gift for everyone listening to this. I think when I first started, John, I was really digging in on like, do I want to do this high ticket dropshipping thing? No one was saying, here's my business, go look at it. That's all I wanted. I was like, just show me one so I can actually wrap my head around what everyone's talking about on these podcasts and videos I was watching. And so I too don't like showing a bunch of stuff off personally, but I'll show you some. And this is where I have a little gift for you. I actually built a wine site. I bought an aged domain and I was going to build a wine site, and I actually hired a new team member, and he did all of his training on this site. So, he just recently bought it from me. I think he's going to turn it into an affiliate site at this point. He doesn't work for me anymore, but it's plazawine.com. It's an aged domain. And we just built all of our SOPs on there. So if you want to see a decent looking site, I think. I do think that's unshoptimized, though. John might have a problem with it. but it's a decent looking site, and you can see how the products are built and the collections are built out and cool things like that. So if you ever wanted to just see, hey, what does one of these look like? Go to plazawine.com. I have no idea, his name's Tyler, what Tyler's doing with it at this point, but that's my little gift to you. And I found out the same thing you said, John, as we were training over there and we started calling a few suppliers. I was not impressed with the margins. This is not tax advice. Every single brand we talked to wanted to charge us tax in every different state, even though they were selling to us and not our end customer, which just the tax confusion around everything in the United States is wild. I don't think anybody actually knows the real answer, and we can thank our Congress for that, for not really giving us the right answer here. Again, not tax advice. But it was like, all right, we have shit margins, and then you're going to charge us tax, and we don't have a way to like pass that on to the customer and then give it to you, which doesn't even make sense at all. If we're going to charge tax, we have to file the taxes. Anyway, it was just a very confusing niche in so many ways, and everything was kind of low price too, right? It was like, you know, $300, $400, $500, which is just not where I want to be. Like some of the units that would like cool a whole room, those were, you know, up in the thousands of dollars, and that's where I like to play personally. I want to sell something that's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 and has 30-40% margins on there. So there's really a whole lot of room to play around, and I don't think any of that criteria was matched in inside of this niche.
Totally. Couldn't agree more. All right. Next up, this is one that's very, very close to my heart, very dear to me because it was my first business. And that's home lighting or lighting. So things like chandeliers, pendant lights, lamps, outdoor lights, you name it. So my first store, chicchandeliers.com.au, which you can get on and actually still look at because it is still in operation after a fashion. Similar to Ben's story, I sold this one for a very decent chunk of money and the people who bought it off me ran it into the ground. So asterisk, I haven't had anything to do with that site since 2017, so don't judge me on that. But that was my first business. And at that time, I actually sold quite a bit through that site. It did pretty well. And the reason for that is that it was in Australia. So if we're talking about the US market, I would absolutely not do lighting. It is way too competitive. So for individual products in that space, it's not uncommon to see 50 or more sites selling them. And there's just no way for you to differentiate yourself. Like there's, when you're talking about that volume of sellers, there is no way to differentiate yourself. The attraction to that market is that every house or business has lights in it, right? So you think, oh, cool, man, that's such a big market. There's so much money to be made, which is probably what I thought at the time. But the reality is that, yeah, that's true, but there's also a massive amount of people selling them. There's so many different places you can buy them, both online and physical stores as well. You know, it's tough. When it's that competitive, it's really tough. It takes you a long time to get established. You got to spend quite a bit of money on marketing to get your foot in the door, which is what I learned the hard way until I sort of found a mix. So it was a really tough journey for me. If I had my time again, one of the things I would change was not operating that as my first business. I learned a lot the hard way doing that one.
I think my brain immediately goes to, could you actually find a small who here, right? So I don't know if this is popular. I have no sense of style whatsoever. You'll see by my plain white t-shirt I'm wearing for the listeners at home. But like, could you build a lighting and, you know, into our next one, furniture, like something for the home that is like industrial was popular for a while, right? Could you just make a worthy industrial interior designers.com or whatever the heck it is, right? And you could sell just the lighting that fit that industrial look and the pipes and the furniture around it. Do you think you could pull that off, John? Or like, you know, and I know I'm moving ahead to furniture, but same sort of thing. Yeah. Low margins, shitty shipping, low prices, furniture is also like way stock, yeah, out of stock for years to come at this point. Do you think that's possible though?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to think about it. And that often is the right approach to take in a really big market is to sort of narrow it down and make have a focus. And I would say if you were hell-bent on doing lighting or something like that, that would be the direction to take. Don't say I'm going to be like a lighting general store and sell everything. Not to mention there's like literally in the US, there's hundreds of thousands of products in that space. Of individual products, right? So the customer has so much choice of different products as well. And if you want to put them all on your site, you're just creating yourself a nightmare from like an SEO perspective, from a, you know, just getting it all up there. It's really hard. But yeah, look, the problem I have with that is that lighting is still not it's not an interest-based product. Like nobody is passionate, truly passionate about lighting. Nobody's buying lighting because they want to. They're buying it because they need to. And you'll say, yeah, well, there's a particular style, but you could still have a bunch of different people, I think, even within that, who like industrial lighting. I still don't think it's like it's not like somebody who loves playing golf, for example, or, you know, somebody who's into their health and well-being and they're passionate about fitness or something like that. People aren't like that with lighting or, for that matter, furniture, to be honest. You could say maybe some interior designers they've made that their business or their job. They probably are. They may well be very passionate about that. And so maybe there definitely is a B2B angle to those products. But once again, even with that, every other store that sells lighting products is still going to be selling those products. So it'd be a small advantage, I think, doing that. But to me, it doesn't overcome the other negatives to that particular market for sure.
Yeah, we kind of touched on it. I think furniture, our next one, falls into all those same categories. I don't think we need to go too deep. Don't sell lighting. Don't sell furniture. There's much, much better options out there, personally. I'm going to jump to the next one where I actually have a little experience here, which is pitching machines. Seemed like a good idea. I am the biggest baseball junkie ever. We're literally recording this on the day MLBPA and MLB made a deal. Baseball's back. I've been refreshing Twitter all day long. I'm excited. I love baseball, so I thought this would be a good idea. And I got it up. I got it launched, and pitching machines had 5% margin. Some of them went up to 7%, a whole 7% margin. They were terrible. The one caveat I'll say is, like, so, you know, I had pitching machines, and some of those vendors had like volleyball serving machines and football throwing machines. I don't know what those are even called anymore. Some of those, while they had shit margins, I ranked for immediately on a brand new site, a site that had no domain authority, just doing what I, you know, what we teach in Dropship Breakthrough on how to set up your product pages the correct way and your collection pages the correct way. I ranked really, really fast. And so, you know, I probably could have carried on that business, skating by on shit margins and just living on SEO, but there's so much better use of my time than 7% margins. That, to me, that was like the main reason I shut that down. I actually, I enjoyed talking to coaches and talking to athletic directors and towns and things like that that wanted to order these things. But yeah, at the end of the day, money solves everything. So if you can find a niche that doesn't have 7% margins, they have 40, 50% margins, you have so much more room to play around, and it just didn't exist in this niche.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. Cool. All right. No pitching machines, fishing rods, fishing, avoid it. That's the next one on the list. Number six. Fishing rods, look, it comes up a lot for people. I've heard this a lot of times. It's a good sort of passion-based niche, but the reality is there's very little high-ticket stuff in there, actually. Like fishing rods, there are some, but the bulk of that market is in what we would call the low or even mid-ticket. And mid-ticket items can be okay, but I think, as we probably mentioned before, you've got to have a good margin on them for that to work. And once again, fishing, these products are sold in a lot of places. The margins aren't fantastic. There's some brands in there that have better margins, obviously, but they're very low. And then you've got all this other low ticket stuff that you have to sell to make a site like that make sense, right? If I'm a fisherman, I don't just want to go to a site that only sells high-end fishing rods, right? You know, I want to go to a site where I can buy, you know, reels, or I can buy my lures or my other tackle and all of that sort of stuff, which is all, there's a lot of it, and it's all, you know, quite low ticket. I mean, you can probably make the argument, well, why don't you just focus on selling bundles and things like that? But that's not a great argument. Doesn't make it worthwhile. And it's a reasonably competitive space as well, right? So, you know, both online and offline.
Yeah, I know somebody that was successful in here, but it wasn't from running ads. They didn't have any margin to run ads. It was pure hustle. They were like in Facebook groups, constantly commenting on everything and providing value. And that was their way of driving their traffic. And it worked. Like, they made some sales. A funny story. I think they sold the business, and then the next person crashed it, and they went and bought it back for pennies on the dollar, and then did the exact same thing, just went back into Facebook groups and made it work again. But it wasn't like nice. This blow me out of the water business, as far as I remember. And so, yeah, I definitely wouldn't recommend fishing. It does fit a lot of other criteria, so it's kind of unique in that way that it fits a lot of other things we talk about, but it just doesn't have the high ticket products. It doesn't have the selection, and even the high ticket products that it does have, like the fishing pontoons and stuff, I don't think the margins are there. And so, yep, big thumbs down on fishing rods.
Just as a side note there, you mentioned like the person who was running that site, they did it all on hustle and that, but they said they couldn't afford to run ads. That's like an automatic red flag for me. If somebody says, oh, I've got a business, but I can't afford to run ads, I can't afford to actually pay for any marketing, that's always a red flag for me. That just automatically means your margins are too low. Like, there's no value to that business. I mean, SEO is great. Obviously, we're the biggest fans of SEO and generating traffic organically, and it's great to have hustle. But if you can't advertise your business, I don't think you're in a strong position. Not to mention, I just wouldn't buy that business either. Like, if I'm a website investor, I'm going to devalue that massively if you say I can't afford to run ads. So just a little hint there. If you ever hear someone saying that, run away from what they're doing.
Yeah, and finally on our list, number seven, Brian Angel kind of touched on it on a recent Freedom Friday episode. If you haven't listened to that, check out our Freedom Friday episode with Brian Angel. Great guy and one of my best friends, probably also jumping up and down about baseball today. We talked about why Standing Desk is just, it's just not a good niche anymore. So him and I were together on Standing Desk Nation, as we mentioned in that episode. Still live, still make sales for Brian, but that's not his main focus anymore because all of the margins got eroded away. All of the there was quite a few of the brands that were just like, we don't want anyone selling our stuff anymore. They kind of curled up their shell. And when COVID hit and everybody started working at home, you would think that would like drive a lot of sales, and it did, right? A lot of sales, but it drove a lot of individual sales. So cost per clicks in that industry is like $7 a click, which is unreal, right? And if you're going to pay $7 a click and you sell a $250 standing desk that you make, you know, 50, 75 bucks on something like that, you're not going to make a sale every single click, right? So do the math yourself. You're going to quickly not have any money left. So all those individual sales that were happening because of COVID, while on paper it seemed great, there was no money to be had on the back end. And what happened before COVID was the government or big businesses would buy 50, 60, 70, 100 desks at a time, and those massive orders had all sorts of margin in them that just didn't exist in those single unit orders. And so I want to say, and I think he mentioned this on my podcast, so I think I'm free to say this, I think we did $1 million in revenue the last year we were together, and we made like $10,000. Which sucks, right? Like, you know, it's great to be part of the 4% of businesses that ever get to seven figures, but we didn't make any fucking money. So, yeah, pretty shitty niche to be in at this current time. And I don't know if it ever gets better. There's just so much competition there. Margins are getting slimmer. Suppliers are going away, and cost per clicks are insane.
Yeah. Great insight, because that definitely is one that is on some people's top 10 list. I know that for sure. And I get a lot of people who are looking to get started and asking for advice from me, at least, to have that as one of their top ideas that they'd like to get started in. So, and once again, that's one of those niches, I think, where when you look at it from the outside with none of that insight, it looks like a good one to do, right? Particularly now, you'd be like, oh yeah, everyone's working from home, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've got a standing desk right here, right? And just some of those things you just can't know as a newbie. So, lucky that you get to hear it here first from Benny.
And just real quick, Brian did exactly what we teach in the course. We like moved a private label and we pivoted. Brian actually, we went and acquired one of the brands we were selling, who was closing up shop. We acquired that brand. We're selling the standing desks under our own brand name now. Then Brian went and acquired a treadmill desk company, which is InMovement.com. Quite a story. If you haven't listened to that Freedom Friday episode a couple episodes back, might even be two episodes back here. Yeah, go check it out. Freedom Friday with Brian Angel. I think you'll enjoy that one. And he really embodies what we try to teach in this course of, like, you know, be ready to pivot and also be ready to like bring in your own product once the traffic is there for you. So pretty cool story. Make sure you check out that podcast. Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business. John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business. Not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business, we're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.